You may feel like you are alone somewhere, but take that as an inflection point. That might be start of a new path that will take you at a journey that you will enjoy. I love what I do now. I really enjoy what I do now because whatever project I'm working on, there is a tangible difference I'm making.
Welcome to the Disruptive Innovators, Champions of Digital Business podcast, where IT and digital leaders from around the world talk about their careers, their inspiration, and their vision for the future of digital business. I'm your host, David Wright. The world of digital business is evolving faster than ever, and I want this to be a place where digital business champions create a village to band together and help each other navigate the ever-changing terrain. Disruptive Innovators features conversations with CIOs and digital leaders from around the world, diving into their personal backstory, career, their current role, trends they've been seeing, and their vision for the future, personally, professionally, and otherwise. This podcast is made for people who are seeing how quickly the digital business landscape is evolving. Those who recognize that it takes a village of trusted advisors to navigate this ever-changing terrain. People who enjoy listening to high-level discussions surrounding what it means to be a leader, real-world examples of challenges faced, and industry-specific strategies leveraged to create exceptional business outcomes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.
Good afternoon, friends. David Wright here, and I'm your host of the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast. And today I am lucky enough to be joined by Raman Kaur. Raman, pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, David. Thank you so much for having me here, and I'm genuinely excited for our conversation today.
Yeah, me too. I was really intrigued by your experience. I know you've run the gamut in regard to a number of different roles and responsibilities, a lot of experience in healthcare, which obviously our listeners have a large contingent that are interested in that experience. So excited to get into it. Before we do, for any of our listeners who may not be familiar with you or your body of work, maybe you could just share a little bit about your current role.
Sure. So currently, I lead a technology and strategy innovation team for a global education business. We are in all facets of education and publication and research. We sit at the crossroads of healthcare and digital learning. So think about my work as transformation on how professional clinicians learn, doctors, nurses, other allied professionals, basically anyone you will come in contact with in a healthcare journey. We try to take a static content like books and other materials into turning them into an intelligent, adaptive, and immersive experience that truly changes the behavior and outcome of learning. I think I really get excited thinking about this because having been at that cross-section once myself, merging of this human learning, data science, and design where technology becomes like a silent partner and helping people heal, people feel better is a really exciting potential.
I'm excited to dive more into that journey. Before we do, I always just like to ask my guests if there was one piece of actionable advice you might look to leave everyone with today, what would that be?
So I will not tell you things that I don't follow. So this is a real vulnerable podcast, I hope. So I think for me, it's curiosity. I think for specifically in my journey, I feel like curiosity has compounded faster than my experience. The moment you stop being curious, you almost become irrelevant. That's very true in today's world. And I've learned that most innovative people, hopefully all of our listeners here are innovative, most innovative people are willing to ask uncomfortable questions. They challenge assumptions, they challenge the status quo, and they keep learning. So I'd really recommend everyone to operate with curiosity first mindset.
Love that. It's a great reminder to me and to our listeners. And I think for me, in order to stay curious, I also need to be grounded in humility and the not knowing. Like I have to be comfortable also with the fact that I may not know. which was in stark contrast to my younger years where I thought I knew everything.
We were all there.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's get into it. So Ramon, like I had mentioned a little earlier on the show, varied experience. Tell everybody a little bit about how you started out and how you got to the point that you're at in your career today.
I love talking about it. I call it my squiggly career. That could be a whole podcast in itself, but I started my career in the clinical world and I saw firsthand how information gaps can really shape outcomes of what was in front of me, which was real patients. This experience gave me unshakable respect for both the human side of care and power of knowledge, as you say, especially being a clinician or expected to have all the answers, know everything. But when I was present in front of the technology tools of the time, I felt like I was powerless at moments where there was a real information gap. And that's what led to me becoming a change agent. I didn't want to just be that one clinician complaining about how my EMR is not working or how I have to fax somebody. And I can't believe we still have to fax things in 2010. But basically, I wanted to take the problem head on. And I became obsessed with technology and how it could make human experience better, how it can bridge the distance between knowing and doing. And then the same curiosity, power of curiosity, led me from being on a patient side to a corporate organization from where technology really can create a powerful change. I hung my white coat and I decided that I will educate myself in the realm of technology and try to join the other side of the workforce where real solutions are built and make a difference from the other side of the house.
Very cool. I've seen more and more of that in the recent years, but you've been at it from this vantage point for a little while now, right? Is that?
That's right. Yeah, more than a decade.
Really cool. What would you say, Ramon, is one of the most important lessons that you learned along the way? And it could be back in your clinical days or in more recent years. And it could have arose out of a difficulty, whatever might be, you know, relevant to you.
Yeah. So being a very quintessential millennial, I face analysis paralysis. I overthink and I have no shame in admitting that. So I think for me, the learning comes from there had to be a real journey for me to stop overthinking, stop trying to make perfection the enemy of action and become action oriented, really take the step. Early in my career, had I been overthinking, I would still be at that same place, frustrated with my career, become a over leveraged, burned out clinician and no good for anybody. So I didn't wait for perfect timing. What I did was I took that leap of faith, had confidence. Life taught me that having that action oriented mindset opened doors for me instead of trying to think what would be the perfect time. Additionally, I would say I took small yet bold steps. For anyone that had nothing to do with computer science, trying to go and learn and get yourself educated could be a real imposter syndrome moment. But I let the action and the courage to take steps open opportunities, allow my perspective to change, and allow confidence to foster organically.
Love that. Over the years, we've talked a lot about imposter syndrome and what it takes to overcome something like that. It took me years to really settle into being right-sized, right? So like not being a big shot, because I feel like for a long time I'd swing between both ends of the spectrum of feeling like, what am I doing? I'm like the man, and it wasn't great. I think it takes what it takes to work through the imposter syndrome. Nowadays, I will still have moments where I take a step back and I'm like, holy cow, like this is pretty wild. And what I end up realizing is that I did keep my head down. You mentioned curiosity when we first started the episode. That has been such a huge part of it, just staying curious. And if I don't know the answer, I'm the type of person that's going to go figure it out. Like I'm going to go find the person or the resource that does have the answer and study it and learn it. And then my knowledge ends up just being the accumulation of knowledge of people that were ultimately smarter than me in different subjects and veins. It's just funny how that goes.
That's a great point that you're making, because people feel like, is this conversation going to help me? But I really want to urge anyone that's listening that any conversation in the interest of the topic that you want to grow your knowledge in is never wasted. You will always end up gaining something. You will always end up learning something. So go have the conversation. Again, the imposter syndrome, right? People feel like, what if I ask a stupid question? And again, I feel like this has been said a million times, but there are no stupid questions. It's just the people who may prevent themselves from pursuing the journey to an answer they are thinking about. Great point.
Personally, was and still am in some regards the type of person that needs to be in severe pain to learn my lessons. So I have to be in pain before I decide to change. Now, I will say that actually that's gotten significantly better over the years, but certainly up until my perspective shifted, it was more traumatic. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that I actually learned more from my darkest moments or my perceived failures or things of that nature. They've had the biggest impact on me and my career, my personal life, etc. What would you say is one of your biggest, either if you want to call it a failure, like we're saying, like those end up sometimes being the catalyst for something great. Is there a moment that sticks out in your mind, like a time that you fell, but ultimately took away a profound lesson? Anything like this sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that people may feel like taking a leap of faith into going from being established full-time clinician to going back to school and starting from scratch and learning technology. I felt like that would bring me down quite a bit, but it wasn't actually that. It really was right before I made that choice, I feel like my low end. It wasn't even me feeling that void. It was really the people around me. While people were supportive of me wanting to bring a change, whatever the challenges were, say, for example, a new rollout of a feature in an EMR that's letting us to be slowed down, I felt like people complained, but they didn't necessarily want to be part of the change. So I felt like even when I would create any improvement projects, people did not want to actually participate in it. And that gave me a very disappointing outlook on life. I felt like, am I not in the right profession where people want to do whatever it takes to be efficient and protect their time to see patients? People are okay complaining about it. People are okay feeling bad about it, but they don't want to really participate. But I'm glad that happened, even though that was a pocket of people at the time. I'm glad it happened because it gave me enough spark to say, I'm okay just taking this journey on my own. I'm okay empowering myself with knowledge to be able to do things on my own. This is a very common scenario for people. You may feel like you are alone somewhere, but take that as an inflection point. That might be start of a new path that will take you at a journey that you will enjoy. I love what I do now. I really enjoy what I do now because whatever project I'm working on, there is a tangible difference I'm making to millions of people. At one point, I used to be happy just being able to help somebody one-on-one, but now my thirst for being able to make an impact is so much larger because I see the positive impact it has on people through our projects. If you find yourself in that place where you feel like you're alone and you're facing this problem and no one else is with you, still be curious, still take action, because it's going to open a new door for you.
I was talking with someone earlier this morning at Kaiser Permanente, and we were talking about if I would have gotten what I thought I wanted, I would have been selling myself short, you know, in a given moment. Just meaning that, like, when I've stayed open to the possibilities and not been so tied to a specific outcome or tied to the way something needs to look, and I've just taken the next right action, stayed curious, things have had a way of matriculating that has actually been really amazing. And in addition to that, I think going back to the issue that you faced when you were in that setting, like the clinical setting, it's a very common phenomenon for there to be 70% of individuals that are disgruntled with the current situation. They maybe feel detached from the vision of the, maybe some of the executive team is working on this like grand plan to reinvent things or not. And I was talking about this with someone yesterday about how the fact that 70%, like McKinsey does these studies like year over year, like digital transformation initiatives fail and have failed for the last 20 years at a rate of 70% or something like that. And then I was talking to somebody yesterday about the fact that 70% of employees at enterprise organizations feel disengaged or disassociated with that greater purpose or leadership in the organization. And McKinsey will point to the fact that a lot of these, and just for the record, I'm not citing, I'd have to go back to know exactly what the statistics are, right? So don't quote me on that exact percentage, listeners. But they'll point to organizational change management, communication, enrollment. For an individual who was in that position, who has a job of seeing patients, to go and try to enroll all of these people in what's possible, is it's an impossible task, right? It's just like, even if you wanted to do it and didn't have the legacy baggage of whatever had gone on in those relationships and those internal dynamics with those individuals, it would be a very tall order, right? I was just on the line with a health system like 2 hours ago. We were talking about this exact topic, how they're facing this situation where they're trying to have an impact, but it feels like they're trying to boil the ocean, but they need to take a holistic look. But how do they do it? And we explained what it's taken in our perspective is sometimes we'll have like 100 conversations up front with different operational stakeholders, different heads of the medical group, different doctors, different digital IT folks, and just let them like lay it on us, just blah, just those complaints, like you're saying. And we become a catalyst. And then we come back in a few weeks and we say, okay, Ramon, if we could solve for X, Y, and Z, is that something you'd be open to? And they say, okay, yeah, we'd be open to it. And that's how it starts. But oftentimes it takes an outside entity for some reason.
Yeah, because guess what? You're trying to talk to people and top management is telling the individual contributors, you must talk to David because he has great ideas to help you. And it takes a top-down approach. But if there are individuals that are self-driven from within the organization trying to bring that change, you can't get time from anybody. And then guess what you're doing? You are driving up people who could have been your true allies and creating a positive change, improving metrics, bringing more revenue, whatever it is that is important to a company, right? For me, this is a great student observation that everyone, when they feel like something has to be fixed, they want to go out there and boil the ocean. I was trying to drive change from bottom up, and bottom up change is extremely difficult to do. I mean, that is one approach I have taken with my teams at Elsevier, is allowing bottoms up change. Our organization has brilliant people. Many of them, I would say almost 30-40% of the people are doctoral level educated. They know how to do research. They know how to drive projects with evidence-based observations. So who am I to try to discount their suggestions? They're a group of individual, and they're a group of very bright individuals who have true knowledge that to bring forward change. So I urge other leaders to make sure that you don't distinguish the energy of those self-driven catalysts in your organization.
Yeah, that's good dialogue. And I want to talk a little bit more about what you guys are up to at Elsevier. Before I do, I always just like to ask, favorite book or literary piece, either that you've read recently, all time, just had an impact that comes to mind, dealer's choice.
I'm going to go with book. I love going back to, because I've read it already probably twice, I love going back to Infinite Games. So if anybody who's not read Infinite Games by Simon Sinek, it is based on game theory. So game theory explains finite and infinite variables. And then again, that's my interpretation. So listeners, don't come at me telling me this is not. The point is that there are infinite games, like any of the sports, football, basketball, they end after a certain time frame. But constructs like life or business, they're infinite. And how does that keep evolving? How does it frame contribution? Idea is that your role is not to win. Your role is to modify your strategy with the change of the game. So it resonated very deeply with me because I'm part of a very fast changing world. And I didn't help myself by continuing that pace in parallel with changing my career or changing what I did consistently. So being part of the fast changing industry, taking on challenging opportunities. So for me, goalposts was never the same. And this book is a very good grounding piece of literary, almost like an instrument. It teaches me something new every time because I'm reading it from a different perspective every time I come back to it.
Yeah, I got to check it out. I've never had the opportunity to read it, so I'll add it to my list. So now you're at Elsevier, you're leading a number of IT functions. Ramon, let's talk about your vision for the organization and maybe, and obviously based off the mission of the overarching organization and maybe some of the key initiatives you guys are focused on.
I'm going to try to keep it brief because I could talk about it for days because I'm so excited by things we're doing. But if I had to summarize, we are looking to build learning systems. They are systems now. They are not just books, apps. It's so evolved. And I'll talk about that in a moment. But we're building learning systems that think with us, but not for us. So think about the whole revolution with AI. AI is in everything. And we are very sensitive as we integrate AI into our digital tools so that AI does not take over our thinking. Because it's very important that these students that are going through training to become doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, dental, whatever it is that they're doing, that they develop critical thinking skills because they are going to be taking care of humans, all of us. We try to make technology an amplifier of the human capability and not replace the human capability. Very important. So imagine education that adapts with each learner's rhythm, strength, neurodivergence, context, not just helping them pass the exams because we are just giving you this information. You vomit the information in the exam and you're done with it. This is to help you think critically, make you have better decision-making capability, show up confidently in real life. Being a day one person that stands in front of a patient and the patient's really sick and you don't know what you're doing, we don't want those experiences to happen for our learners. So the kind of future I want to build towards is where AI and humans build an empathetic coexisting team. And AI doesn't think for you, you don't think for AI, but it is a blended, effective team. So I can talk about some initiatives if you have any comments to add.
What I understand is it's a learning management system. So are doctors getting like accreditation for taking like courses on the platform, or is it more like an internal LMS, or is it both effectively?
That's a great question. We integrate with your existing learning management systems with the university. We are not trying to replace what the universities are out there trying to offer as a syllabus, curriculum, or education management system. We work in tandem with the faculty. Faculty will work with us to build personalized tools for learning. So if I could just talk about some of the top initiatives we're investing in right now is personalized intelligence. So personalized learning and intelligence is a very big topic currently being researched on. Learning modalities for all individuals that go through university is very different. Some people are visual learners, some people are audiovisual learners, some people are spatial learners, some individuals experience different neurodivergent needs. So how do we use AI to dynamically adapt learning styles so that you get your content that you are supposed to be learning and you will get tested on real time based on your learning needs? That's a very big concept that's emerging in education technology. So for example, you might be someone that learns more by audiovisual. So your learning methodology in your interaction with our AI digital assets will be For example, your question is, I want to learn more about malaria. I can't think of anything else right now. It's late on Friday. Your learning style might be less text, more pictures. But somebody else's style might be a video that explains the concept of how malaria spreads. So that's what we're trying to get to, is how can we customize learning to your style so that the learning is effective for your needs. In tandem, we are exploring immersive simulations. So virtual reality. It is a well-known fact that hospitals are understaffed. And after the pandemic, it only got worse. So while there are doctors and nurses trying to treat patients, they also have a responsibility for training and allowing some of the doctors and nurses in training to shadow them. Now, as you can imagine, that creates a little bit of a distraction for a practicing physician or a practicing nurse to take care of the patients while they're babysitting a student. And learning opportunities on the go are unfortunately limited for healthcare professionals in training. So we want to supplement that by creating virtual reality simulation scenarios. So this would be like a gaming experience if you have ever tried the Meta glasses or Oculus glasses. So you basically will be launched in a real patient setting, and based on what you're trying to learn, say it's a procedure or it is an interview technique, you will be able to get this experience through a scalable, accessible platform, allowing you to have complex skill building. As you can imagine, sometimes we have students that might be not from very metropolitan areas like you and I. We just expect that there's a hospital on every corner, but that might not be the case in some of the rural areas or less serviced areas across the United States. And unfortunately, approximately 40 to 50% of our student population is present in those areas. So how do we supplement learning for them when their opportunities are even slimmer? So this is one way to map the gap. And lastly, data-driven insights, data analytics and data-driven insights. Data is the currency in today's time. So creating an ecosystem where educators get real-time feedback on how learners or students are grasping the information. Consistent assessment and insights to tell faculty that, say, a cohort of students might be struggling in a certain concept, and maybe they pivot from teaching them everything again to a certain concept where that's the only gap they have between studying something and passing their board exams. Today, what happens is nearly all types of learning medical professionals will take a practice exam to prepare for their respective board exams. Nursing students have board exams, medical students do. Nearly all practicing specialties have a board exam. When you take this preview, this practice exam, you might do really well on certain concepts and you may not do very well on some of the other concepts. We don't have a lot of ways to personalize that remediation for you. You are just on your own to go back and learn everything again and hope you'll pass your board exam. That's not effective. It's not effective because the coursework is so vast and faculty struggles on how to coach their students on remediating some of the weaker concepts. So we're trying to use data to drive more tailored insights for faculty and students so that they can get to their board exams faster. They don't have a lot of churn. And we have seen that some students may abandon the idea of becoming a nurse or a doctor or another type of practicing specialist that we so badly need right now because they feel like this exam or this field is not meant for them based on this practice exam. So we don't want that happening just because we don't have a deeper way of providing them information on what are the five core concepts they need to strengthen. So anyway, to summarize, we are trying to create a big shift in clinical microeducation from content delivery to tailored capability development.
Got it. Now that makes sense for sure. What about some of the biggest challenges that you guys are facing as an organization? Obviously, there's a lot of macroeconomic effects of what's happening federally for at least health systems. What about you guys? What are some of the biggest challenges that you're facing as an organization?
So not to bring everybody down from all that exciting work that we're doing, but challenges are real for any large, fast-moving technology organization. And we have the same problems. Might be a little bit tailored towards education tech, but something that comes to my mind is I feel like we're at a very fascinating and fragile point in this innovative journey with AI. AI is evolving really fast. It's evolving faster than our ability to ethically and responsibly integrate it. Everyone wants to beat the competition. Everyone wants to get to the market faster. And I worry that we might be cutting corners around the ethical and responsible piece of it. Now, for Elsevier, we are very mindful. We're very mindful of that. And we have coalitions in our organization, guardrails and governance, that it does deep evaluation of our AI tools to make sure that we don't introduce bias, we don't introduce any of such concerns that I'm mentioning. But are you able to catch everything? You can't. The technology is just so new. So I think the biggest challenge is balancing the velocity with the vigilance and ensuring that we don't lose sight of the human-centric North Star while we're trying to embrace these tools.
That makes sense. I think that's true of any industry right now. I was just talking about that with somebody else. So a couple more questions for you, Ramon. Where do you see the learning, education, technology, industry going in the future, and or what do you think will be some of the biggest changes as time passes?
Yeah, it's a great question. Something we deliberate very often, because learning industry in itself is changing so quickly as well. But I feel that the future of learning, really any knowledge industry, like K-12, university, professional, is moving from that static to dynamic phase. So from one size fits all, here is a book, learn everything and get ready for your exam. We want to go from there to being more adaptive. We want students to fall in love with the content, with what they're trying to do. Students from college to professional education to graduate school, they pay a lot of money and they take on a lot of debt to learn this. It's our responsibility to make this experience the best quality it's possible. So AI will redefine not just what we learn, but how we measure mastery, how we collaborate, how we build these digital systems. So the next great challenge, like I said, is obviously introducing it responsibly. I feel like we're going to have this slowdown moment as we move very fast towards those solutions where people are going to have to go back and look at it and say, did we do it right? Is it achieving the right outcomes? And any organization like Elsevier that does this thoughtfully is going to be ahead of the competition. So for me, I feel like the learning industry is all going towards that adaptive leveling up the human potential. But anyone that's not doing it thoughtfully is going to have to come back and circle around losing the competitive edge.
It's interesting, too, because I think about like best practices from a leadership and coaching standpoint as an executive or otherwise. Everyone is different. Each individual responds differently. They learn differently, even like past in a corporate setting. So the way that I interact with one employee and how I work to bring out the best in them and learning opportunities, even in the workforce or otherwise, could be completely different than this person over here. So I really love to hear that, because I didn't even know that was really happening in the learning tech industry. And I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old and another baby coming. The fact that they might be able to have access to more learning programs that were customized because they're more of a visual learner, or one's more of a whatever it might be, that's exciting to me. And I think it's an example of how AI isn't going to stop kids from learning. It's going to hopefully adapt to help them learn more and learn more effectively. Because it's like you said, like when I was a kid, they slap you with a book. They're like, read this, figure it out. Maybe the teacher talks through it in the class and writes on a chalkboard, but then you have to go figure it out. Like, it was fairly static. There wasn't a lot of evolution there. But this seems like a big leap.
It's a big leap. And if I could just add something else for the industry, something else that I have very recently, somewhere else that I gave a talk related to the future and evolution of AI, industry agnostic, to be honest with you, I would say I'm seeing there's a trend about becoming very I don't think it's a trend. I feel like it was always there, but now there is an obsession about being user obsessed. You have to focus more on what your user is looking for. Every decision must ladder back to human outcomes versus just building something because your boss told you to, or the board is wanting that, or that is changing. And I see the industries that are doing well, even in the ed tech world, it's those companies that are more user obsessed, or also prototyping faster. We talk about being agile. We talk about agile development, but is it really happening everywhere? No. People take too long to decide what they're looking for. And the prototyping, learning faster, pivoting fast, so fail fast, fail forward methodology, that is very important for organizations to quickly see what are the users responding to. And then lastly, I would love your thoughts on this, but I feel like transparency, the companies that have radical candor, the clarity, the transparency, users and customers respond really well to them. The transparency piece of it, even when they don't do things the right way, the acceptance of that builds trust way more than trying to sell a story that may not be true.
100%. It goes back for me, like when we talk about customer experience, right? Like customer experience 101, like managing expectations. So for example, Delta is very good about proactively reaching out when there's any type of delay or issue or suggesting a next step or, you know, whatever it might be. Or just when something happens, they're like, hey, this happened. It sucked. Like, we acknowledge that. What can we do to make it better? And I think getting out in front of things, acknowledging things like that, because they're going to happen either way. So do you want it to just pop up and hit your customer in the face, or can you use it as a moment to build trust, actually? And I think in my experience, customers, both end consumers, or if you're even in a B2B setting, like, they appreciate that candor for sure. That's a great takeaway for everyone, I think. This was really cool, Ramon. I like to end my episodes with a question. If you could go back 5, 10, even 20 years in time, and you're pretty young, so maybe not that far, but 5, 10 years in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Sure. Yeah, gosh, I always think about that question and I come back to the same answer, which is crazy to me because I have done a little bit of this, but I would say to trust your instincts earlier. I would always second guess myself because coming from training in a clinical or medical setting, you're always asked to double check, triple check your answers, know exactly what you're doing, make sure you don't make a mistake. So it became a second nature for me to always second guess myself, go back. And it was rarely ever about lack of skill in what I was trying to approach or do, but it was always about the fear that I might make a mistake. So I would tell my younger, youthful self to speak up more and take risks and don't wait for the room to agree with you before you lead a change. You grow with confidence by moving towards what scares you and being action-oriented. I would suggest that people do that. Anyone I mentor, and I do try to remain in the mentorship circles as much as possible, and my mentors have taught me to take action earlier, be confident, speak up. You're not upsetting anybody. You're not offending anybody. It's rarely ever about you. But if you speak up, you may be able to advocate for yourself. If you're quiet, there is no advocacy.
I love that. I am so clear it's not about me. It's a good lesson. Nobody's thinking about you. I used to be consumed with self-centered fear. It's debilitating. And so great advice. And what I would leave our listeners with, just that what it reminds me of, is if your organization, if your people, if you feel like you could point to multiple people, or you've talked to multiple people that maybe have felt similar to what Ramon just shared, you may have a culture of fear in your organization. And I've encountered that in a myriad of different organizations. And if you have a culture of fear, just don't expect to be able to innovate. You know, you have to go back and address that with your people. You have to go have those conversations and help them get over the line. You have to lead them. And for me, it happened with mentorship, with therapy, to be honest, with a lot of other things that I had to put in the work But we see it also often as a systemic problem for organizations. And in my opinion, it's one of the biggest enemies to innovations. It's just a good point to end on.
Thank you, David. I'm really grateful for this conversation. I really hope that it leaves our listeners here with a spark to go build, explore, imagine something better than what exists today.
Love that. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed, and we will catch you all next week.
Thank you for listening to the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future episodes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.